For a little while this morning, though, I have a lesson I'd like to share with you, and bits and pieces of it may sound familiar. And the reason it is because it's somewhat of a compilation of really several lessons and several things that people have talked about in the last couple of months. And all of a sudden, one day, it kind of clicked on me, and so I wanted to prepare this lesson. It is a lesson that I've entitled The 100-100 Principle. And so my object here today is rather widespread. I want to change everyone's opinion and thought process when it comes to dealing with people. So that's a pretty big objective that I have. I want you to change and stop and think about the way you deal with your spouse, the way you deal with your children, with the way you deal with your employees, with the way you deal with your bosses, with the way we deal with one another, and the way you deal with the Lord. And so I'm going to try to accomplish this all in about 25 minutes, because this is one of the most impressive concepts I think I've ever stumbled across in the scriptures, something that I've entitled the 100-100 principle. Let's talk about the 100-100 principle. I believe the world has perpetuated a great lie. How often have we heard that marriage is supposed to be a 50-50 proposition? We hear that all the time. Well, it's 50-50. My question is that a biblical concept? And I should have known better, because I'm a math teacher. And so I'm pretty good at arithmetic. I should have known that God does not do arithmetic the same way we do. I should have known that because I remember there was a time that the Lord was in the temple. And he was with his disciples and they were watching people come cast money into the treasury. And there was some that came and were just throwing bukus of money there, lots of bills and lots of money. And then here came a widow woman, said she put in basically 2 pennies. And the Lord said, asked his disciples, who gave more? What's more, 2 pennies or $100? Well, I should have known better because the Lord doesn't do arithmetic like we do. He said the one who gave 2 pennies actually gave more because she gave all that she had. And the rest, they just gave part of what they had. So the Lord doesn't always deal with arithmetic the same way. We like everything to add up to 100. That's the way we do it. We say, well, marriage is a 50-50. It's a give and take. And I don't believe that's what the Bible teaches. The Bible rather teaches a very different principle when it comes to marriage. And as we see, it is not just marriage. And that's where this 100-100 principle comes into play. It's the 100-100 principle. Each party is going to be responsible for 100% of the success of the relationship. It's not 50-50. It's not 70-30. It's not 80-20, but rather it is 100-100. And marriage is just one example of the 100-100 principle. So we're going to start out in Ephesians chapter 5, and we're going to walk our way into Ephesians chapter 6. And I'm going to try to hit every one of you sometime, including myself. We're going to talk to everyone in this building because it is so important that we understand this uniquely Christian situation and this principle. So we're going to begin with marriage. So we already read from Ephesians chapter 5 in our text. Wives, he says, he's speaking directly to the wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. And he starts saying this verse that a lot of times you just want to stop. And you would just prefer to stop at verse 24 and not keep going. Because then you kind of see the husbands nudging their wives a little bit, saying, see, right there, you better do what I tell you to do. It is your responsibility to make sure this marriage is successful. And if you just stopped at verse 24, you might say to yourselves, I think it's 100% the responsibility of the wife. Isn't that what it sounds like? It says, wives, you submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. Sounds to me like it's the wife's responsibility to make sure the marriage is successful. Oh, but not quite so quick, because then we have to keep going. And we get to verse 25. And now this is where the wives normally start nudging the husband. And it says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that he should be holy without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. So wait just a minute. Now if I asked you whose responsibility is it to make the marriage successful, it appears to me it's the husband's responsibility. It says he has to love his wife in the same, let me take it back. He doesn't say like his wife. Or he doesn't say honor his wife or respect his wife or love his wife a little bit or love his wife a whole bunch. No, it says love your wives. Look at how it's qualified. As Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. So in other words, a husband should be willing, out of love for his wife, to give up his very life for his wife. Whose responsibility is it to keep the marriage happy? Well, if you looked at that, you would say, well, it's the husband. So much to the point that the husband has to be willing to die, to lay down his life for his spouse. That is powerful. And it is given with the same analogy of how Christ loved the church. So now do you see the 100-100 principle? It is not 50-50. In God's way of doing arithmetic, it doesn't have to add up to 100. God says it is the wife's responsibility by submitting to her husband. But at the same time, he says, husband, it is your responsibility that you have to love your wife in the same manner that Christ loved the church. And be willing to give yourself and to give of your life for your wife. And it's powerful, is it not? Unfortunately, I'm going to guess most marriages in our country probably aren't 100-100. Sadly enough, I'm going to say most marriages in our country probably aren't 50-50. Maybe 70-30, 80-20. Sometimes it seems like one spouse might be working a whole lot harder than the other and almost just having to accept what the other spouse does. That is not the biblical concept of marriage. The biblical concept of marriage is the 100-100 principle. We are each completely responsible for the well-being of the other party. Isn't that neat? But it's not just marriage. All right, kids, here we go. Your turn. What about children and fathers? I want you to keep reading now in Ephesians. Now we're going to roll into Ephesians chapter 6. So I'll ask the question, whose responsibility is it to keep the relationship between the child and the parent intact and healthy? Well, in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1, he says, children, obey your parents. He says, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. So who does he begin with? He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Whose responsibility is it to keep the parents and the children from fighting? Well, if the kids would just do what they are told to do, it would take care of everything. My poor little Erin, she hears that on a daily basis. Just do what I tell you to do, and everything will take care of itself. Because it is the kids' responsibility. Listen to your mama. Listen to your daddy. And I don't even really know when that stops. I don't care if you're 25 years old, lady. You may listen to your mama. Don't turn away from your parents. It is the kid's responsibility to obey the parents. And if you stop right there, you'd say it's 100% the responsibility of the kids to make sure that relationship is good. But then verse 4, oh, he did it again. Verse 4, and you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. And yes, Erin has gotten smart enough that she will quote that to me now. And so when I get on to her, she will remind me that I'm not supposed to provoke her to anger. So if you look to verse 4, you say, well, whose responsibility is it for the children-parent relationship? Well, it looks to me like it's the father's responsibility. It is 100% my responsibility to make sure that I discipline and train a child, but I do not cross the line and provoke them to anger. In the world of education, I've seen some horrible things. You'd be shocked. Well, some of you wouldn't be. If you've been in the education world too, you wouldn't be. I've seen some horrible teacher-parent conferences, and I have heard some horrible things said from a parent to a child. And we can probably all relate to it. All you got to do is go down to Walmart and see how parents treat their children, and they are provoking their children to wrath because of the way they talk to them. And then we wonder why the parent-child situation doesn't work. Now, half the time we think, well, you know, it's a partnership. That's kind of this new way of thinking. There was a fellow that came out in the 70s that was the great child psychologist. I believe his name was Dr. Spock. And he had some great and wonderful ideas of how parents and children, you weren't really supposed to discipline them, but rather it was supposed to be this partnership between the parent and the child. Well, let me tell you, that didn't work. It is 100-100. It is 100% the responsibility of the parent. It is 100% the responsibility of the child. Isn't that a neat concept? I told you it was uniquely Christian. I can't find anything like this anywhere else. It is a uniquely Christian ideal. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It's the kid's responsibility. But at the same time, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. So we each have the idea placed upon our shoulders, both the child and the father. It's interesting, isn't it? Now, before I go into the employees and employers, or as Paul calls them, bond servants and masters, that's kind of what that means, I want you to notice something. Notice how the Apostle Paul always begins with the group that is kind of the subservient group. He begins with the group that we expect to honor. We begin with the group that we expect to give the most honor and be responsible for success. He starts with the wives, and then he says, oh, not so fast, husbands. Let me talk to you. Then he starts with the children, and everybody's okay with that, the parents anyway. And then he says, not so fast, let's talk to the fathers. He's going to begin with the employers. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, the employees. The ones who should give respect, right? They should give honor. They're the ones who are getting paid. They're the ones who are below the employers. We're going to start with the employees or the bond servants, and then he's going to come back and hit the employers. So just about the time you think you're off the hook, Apostle Paul gets you. So here we go. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5. Are you an employee somewhere? Do you work for somebody? Here we go. Bond servants, he says, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart as to Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bond servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will doing services to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free. Whose responsibility is it to keep peace in the workplace? Well, it's the employees. It's the bond servants. It's the ones who are working, because they're supposed to work with sincerity of heart like they're working for Christ. You don't work for Exxon. You don't work for United Supermarkets. No, you work for Christ. Paycheck may say something different, but we're supposed to work for Christ. It's the employee's responsibility to maintain that relationship. And so the employers, the masters, I mean, they can do whatever they want to, right? They can take away their wages. They can take away their shifts. They can do whatever they want to, right? No, not so fast. Because then he goes in verse 9, and you, masters, do the same things to them, giving up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him. So bosses are responsible for treating the employees the same way that the employees treat the bosses. Isn't that a crazy idea? Bosses are supposed to treat their employees with the same amount of respect that the employees expect from the boss. That is amazing. It is the 100-100 principle. He says, bond servants or employees, be obedient to those who are your masters, just like you're obedient to Christ. And so you may not like to work. I'm not real fond of it. You may not like to be told what to do. You may not like the hours that you get. You may not like the shift that you're working or the type of work that you're doing. I always think about that old Jim Croce song about how he was working at the car wash and he thought he would need to be sitting in the swivel chair behind a desk somewhere, but instead he was out washing those cars. You may think you need to be doing something much, much greater. You may think that your skills and your mind is being wasted in such a menial job. It does not matter. You're to be obedient to your bosses, just as you're obedient to Christ. So we shouldn't be out, you know, coming in late, sneaking out early. We shouldn't be taking supplies from the break room, because we should treat our bosses the way that we treat Christ. It's the employee's responsibility to do what's right. But at the same time, he says, masters, bosses, do the same thing to those that are below you, because you have a master in heaven, and he's going to remember the way you treat your employees. It is the 100-100 principle. I want you to notice, both parties are given the responsibility for maintaining the relationship. There is no this. There is no this, but it is certainly not 50-50. It is 100, 100. I want you to think about this. It's a concept that is unique to Christianity. Let me give you a couple examples outside of the book of Ephesians. What about conflict between Christians? What if two Christians have a problem with one another? How is it supposed to be handled? The words of Jesus teach this exact same concept. The 100, 100 principle. There's two passages that if you look at it the first time, you might say, well, that's kind of contradictory. That doesn't really make sense. One's in Matthew 5 and one's in Matthew 18. If we understand the concept of the 100, 100 principle, it makes sense. So Matthew 5, verse 23. Here the Lord says, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there, remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come back and offer your gift. He says, so if I remember that I did somebody wrong, it is my responsibility to stop what I'm doing and go try to fix it. So let me give you a little visual here. We got the biblical plan for reconciliation. This is Matthew chapter 5. If I do something to somebody else, I'm the offender. I'm the one who caused the problem, and I remember that somebody has something against me. It said I'm supposed to stop what I'm doing and go to that other person and fix it. It is 100% the responsibility of the offender to fix the situation. So if you have done something to somebody else, it is your responsibility to go to them and fix it. And that goes for everyone in this room. If we have said something wrong or done something wrong, hurt somebody's feelings, it is our responsibility to fix it. But then we get to Matthew chapter 18. And in verse 15, the Lord says, moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you will have gained a brother. Now what does that say? That says, now wait a minute, I just noticed that my brother sinned against me. Somebody did me wrong. And a minute ago, I did somebody else wrong, but now somebody did me wrong. So the first time, it was the responsibility of the offender to take care of it. Now what about in this situation in Matthew chapter 18? He says, if you remember that someone offended you, you go to him and tell him that he offended you. And so it goes the other way. The responsibility is placed directly upon the offended. If I realize I've been offended by someone, it is my responsibility, in this uniquely Christian concept, it is my responsibility to go to them and tell them, you have offended me. And you'll probably get it taken care of. And that's an unbelievable concept here. Is that not the 100-100 principle? It is the responsibility of both parties to take care of conflict. Unfortunately, we normally don't do the 100-100 principle. In fact, a lot of times we do the 0-0 principle. And we get mad at people and someone offends us, and so we're going to talk to them. I don't have anything to do with them anymore. And we turn our back on them and go home. And unfortunately, the other party probably does the same thing. And everybody will go talk in their little groups, and they'll get their little clique and their little alliances together, and we'll have two little factions that have formed over a disagreement. If only one of the parties would do what they're supposed to, that's the beauty of it. If only one would do what they're supposed to, the conflict could probably be avoided. It's when both parties refuse to do what the Bible tells us to do. That's when we have a problem. How many problems could be fixed if both parties would do what they're supposed to? We ought to meet each other halfway, coming to take care of the issue. But instead, normally we don't do that. We try to hide, and we get mad, and we pout, and we let our anger take over, and next thing, I don't want to talk to that person. They were rude to me. They hurt my feelings. I don't have anything to do with them. And what a shame, because that is not the biblical concept of dealing with conflict. If there's a conflict in the church, it is our 100% our responsibility to attempt to fix the problem, whether we are at fault or not. And that is so important. It does not matter whose fault it is, whether we have been offended or we are the offender. It is our responsibility to try to stop and fix conflict in the church. So I have a simple question. Well, maybe not too simple. How many unnecessary problems in the church could be avoided if we just follow the principle? And I would guess the vast majority. Now, sometimes there are doctrinal issues. Sometimes there are questions of what the Bible means. Most times it's not. Most times it's questions of opinion or it's situations that don't really have that much importance, but people pick sides, and we get mad at one another, and we pout, and we don't talk to one another, and a big old schism, a divide, forms in the church. And what a shame that is, because it could be avoided if we follow the 100-100 principle. What about the 100-100 principle in salvation? Oh, this is where it gets good. According to the writings of the Apostle Paul, all Christians are responsible for their own salvation, but at the same time, they're responsible for the salvation of others. 100-100 principle in action. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9. Paul says, therefore, we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to Him, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Folks, we're on our own. We are responsible on that day of judgment for the actions that we take, for the things that we do, right or wrong. We are going to have to give an account. We are 100% responsible for salvation. No one can be saved in our place. It is 100% our responsibility. But then there's another verse. What about 1 Corinthians chapter 8? This is a different one. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, but when you thus sin against the brethren and wound the weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. This whole passage is involving about meat that was offered in some type of idol worship, and then they would take the leftovers, and they would go sell it out in the marketplace. And so Brother Joe Norton talked about this a little bit, and there was a great controversy. As Christians, are we allowed to eat this meat that had been used as part of a sacrifice to some idol, to some heathen god? And Paul said, it doesn't matter. The gods don't exist. Meat is meat. If you want to eat the meat, then eat the meat. But there were some people, he said, if you have a weak conscience, that were a little bit iffy about that. And they said, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know if that's the right thing to do. Paul said, if that's the case, then I won't eat the meat. He said, there's nothing wrong with it. But if it causes a weaker brother to sin or to question, then I'm not going to eat it. It's not worth it. Paul said it is 100% my responsibility because I don't want to do anything lest I make my brother stumble. So we're all responsible for our own salvation. But you know what? We're also responsible 100% for the salvation of everyone else in our congregation. We are responsible. And so if we're doing something that causes someone else to sin, it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. If it is causing someone else, a weaker brother or sister, to stumble, then we need to stop. And that's not the way we normally do it. We normally say, oh, just get over it and grow up. That's not what the Bible says. If what we are doing, our actions bother someone else, good or bad, right or wrong, we are to stop. It's the 100-100 principle. We're taught to cease any activity that might cause a weaker Christian to sin, even if the activity is not wrong. And that, folks, is the embodiment of the 100-100 principle. We assume 100% responsibility for our own salvation, but at the same time, we assume the responsibility of the salvation of others as well. That's the 100-100 principle. In Mark chapter 12, I think Jesus tries to explain this. We've heard this verse 100 times, but it may be a little different life now. Jesus answered him, said, the first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. And the second, like it, is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than this. So we talk about loving our neighbor. What does that really mean? That means we are 100% responsible for their salvation. We are 100% responsible for maintaining a situation of peace without conflict. We are 100% responsible for the relationship with our children. We are 100% responsible with the relation with our spouse. And if we can find other people that believe the same way, oh, we've got something there. But as long as one party will do what they're supposed to do, the problem will be solved. If we can find both parties. If we can find Christian fathers and Christian children, all life will be wonderful. If we can find a Christian wife and a Christian husband, all things will be great. If we can find Christians of both sides of any conflict that will work together in the 100-100 principle, it'll make the church stronger. If we have a Christian employee and a Christian boss, it'll make the workplace so much better. It's the 100-100 principle. So what about Jesus Christ? Is there any greater example than Jesus Christ in the 100-100 principle? Jesus gave everything that he had. He gave everything. That's kind of the idea behind this passage here in Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 verse 5, Paul writes, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus." So we're trying to mimic the mind of Christ. He says, "Who being in the form of God, did not consider robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross." Jesus gave 100%. He gave everything. He gave up heaven to come to this earth, and he gave up his life for us. And a lot of people think, well, I deserve that. I deserve that. And they like to go off of the 100-0 principle here. Jesus gave everything, and that way I can do whatever I want to. I am saved by the grace. I'm saved by the grace of God. Be careful of that approach. It is not 100-0. It is 100-100. Because Jesus says, Matthew 16 and 25, "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." We have to give up everything we have. You know, there's a lot of folks, I'm afraid, that live a life that doesn't really match up to what the Scriptures say we ought to be living. And they think that's okay. They think that in the end, everything's going to be taken care of. They are perfectly willing to accept the fact that Jesus gave 100% for them. But it's kind of hard to give 100% back. You know, we don't like trying to give up some of that stuff that we do. The Bible talks about the old man and the new man. We are expected to give up everything that we have and become a new creature. And if we haven't done that, then I'm afraid we're not living the 100-100 principle. If we're continuing to live the old life that we did before we had Jesus in our lives, and we continue to do the same old things, and we hang around the same old people, and we fall into the same old sins time after time after time, and we allow ourselves to do that, is that really the 100-100 principle? Or is it closer to the 120 principle? Lord, I'll give you 20% of my life. Or maybe I'll give you 30%. I'll get rid of some of the bad stuff that I do, but I can't quite give it all. Now the Lord expects the 100-100 principle. We're to give up everything that we have, just like Jesus gave up for us. So as we bring this lesson to a close, I've got to ask the question. Do we live the 100-100 principle? God has given us 100%. Do we give 100% to God? Have we put to death, as Romans 8 and 13 says it, have we put to death the deeds of the body? Have we gotten rid of it? Did we turn away from all the stuff that we used to do? Have we given 100% of ourselves? Sadly, I'm afraid there's many people that are living a godless life, but they're expecting something in return from Him. And I don't believe it works that way. It is the 100-100 principle. So we've got the 100-100 principle in the conclusion now. I want you to remember this. Both parties are responsible for maintaining the relationship. And it is found throughout the New Testament. And it is talked about in terms of marriage. It's talked about in terms of parenthood. It's talked about in terms of employment. It's talked about in terms of conflict and dealing with one another in the Lord's church. We are 100% responsible no matter which side of the fence we're on. It is not 50-50. It is not 80-20. We shouldn't wait for someone else to take the first step. No, it is 100-100. It is a unique Christian concept. And if you're here Wednesday night, you might be able to tie it all together. The 100-100 principle. And I'm going to tell you, this is the reason why most people don't do it. Most people in the world don't understand the concepts of grace, peace, and mercy. I put that up there because as I was studying the book of Jude, the book of Jude begins with a plea. And he says, in Jude, I'm going to turn to it, he says, "Mercy, peace, and love be multiplied to you." And I got to looking at it. You realize nearly every passage in the New Testament, every epistle in the New Testament, once you get to about Romans, start reading all those epistles, there's only about two that don't do it. They talk about grace, peace, mercy, and occasionally love. But those are the big three. Grace, peace, and mercy. Those are Christian virtues. Those are Christian concepts. And it's hard to understand the concept of the 100-100 principle if we don't understand what grace and peace and mercy. If these three things don't lead our lives, then the 100-100 principle is silly. It's ridiculous. You mean you want me to go talk to someone who did me wrong just to maintain peace? Yes, that's exactly what the Bible says. But if we don't understand the concept of peace, it makes no sense. You mean you want me to go talk to someone even though they're mean and they don't deserve it? Yes, that's called mercy. If we don't understand grace and peace and mercy, the 100-100 principle makes little to no sense. We have to change our way of thinking and the way we deal with other people. Whether it's our spouse, whether it's our children or our parents, whether it's our bosses or our employees, whether it's fellow Christians, whether it's relationships with others outside the church, whether it's our relationship with God. We have responsibilities. And if we want to make our life better, if we want to have more peace in our life, let me tell you how to do it. It's the 100-100 principle. Not the 50-50. Not the 120. It's the 100-100 principle. And as I've studied this lesson, and I've started looking for it, it is found throughout the Scriptures. And it is just such a neat principle that if we can learn, it's not hard. All right, it's not easy to do. It's a difficult principle to follow. But if we can, I believe we can make our lives, our service to God, that much stronger. The lesson is yours this morning. Hope that something that would at least spur you on to think a little bit as we deal with people in our daily lives. We never like to close out without having a song invitation. If there's any of you need help in the church, you stand ready to assist.